From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of February 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Kelly Estes will be here, entomologist with the Illinois State Geological Survey and the Prairie Research Institute, to talk about what their insect survey found this past summer in farm fields across the state. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. And I'll remind you now to visit our website at willag.org, where you can get yourself registered today for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Don't wait. Do it right now. The cost is just $40. We have a fantastic agenda planned for you. Just hit the click this link now for more details and scroll up after you get to the page.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.42¾. It was down 4.5 cents. The May 4¾ lower at $4.53½. And December corn down 2¼ at $4.76¾. March beans $11.88½, down 14¾. May contract at $11.98¼, 15½ lower. November futures down 14½ cents at $11.71. Bean meal at $3.56.80, down $4.90. The bean oil for the day, 87 cents lower at $44.73. Soft red in the March at $5.99¾ for the wheat, down $0.01¾. The hard red winter wheat at $6.25 managed a 4¼ cent gain on the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $183.75 for 100 pounds, 57½ higher. Feeders were down 7½ cents at $244.80, and lean hogs at $83.82½, up 7½ cents. Crude oil at $1.64 lower, finished $72.18 a barrel, and the wholesale price of gasoline was down a nickel at $2.14½. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss today's trade. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. It's 65 degrees here. We might even get to 70 today. The winter wheat will be coming out of dormancy probably next week.
Oh, don't worry about it. We'll kill it in a couple of weeks, and you'll be planting something.
What's the old saying? You can kill wheat two or three times before it really gets hurt.
Yeah. That's the case. Let's hope you can kill the market two or three times before it really gets hurt too. Although today, and I didn't really take a look at the markets. I've been busy until just now. I sort of looked back and forth at them, but they weren't down as hard as they were at the close. And I also went and looked, bad for me, at the weekly nearby chart. And this is week 7 of a lower close, and this close in soybeans below $12 just feels really bad. I guess the last time we were here on that chart was in June of this past year, and then it was a couple of years before that. So this is new territory again. What did you make of the market today?
Well, the big thing, I think, Todd, was the fact that the trade's realizing that the soybean supply-demand fundamentals are more shaky than they were back in the month of January. And this couldn't come at a worse time because we're in that base crop price for crop insurance for the base prices for corn and beans in 2024. And we lost a lot of premium in the soybeans. And as you say, the beans are now the next support because we did take out the last month's lows. The next support is November 2021 low of 11.71¼. And after that, there's not much until 10.50. The only reason I bring 10.50 up is because that's essentially where the Brazilian cash price is in Paranagua. It's running at about $407 a ton. And that's the lowest since September 2020. So I had to get puts bought on old crop, the last 30% of old crop for clients this week when we took out those report lows from the January crop report. Haven't done anything in new crop, but that's really on the radar at this point.
Yeah. So if you haven't gotten anything in new crop done, I take it you'll be watching for rallies or someplace. And are you worried that we won't? Without some kind of weather issue here or in South America, see higher prices, much higher prices again, or are we just, I don't know where we drift to at this point.
No, and I think that's a great question, because what my thinking is if we're essentially at 11.75 in the November beans, and then you take a 40 cent basis off that, you're at 1135 times 60 bushels. That's $680 an acre of gross revenue. You really can't go below that. I mean, that's really the issue at hand at this stage of the game. We got to 1205. That was my overvalue level, and we were there for maybe 3 hours or something like that. But the market turned tail again, and it goes right back to what you and I have been talking about the last several weeks, is we can't hold gains if the macro fundamentals keep breaking on us. And that's where China is at the heart of this, and the soybeans and the hogs are at the heart of this. And so this is where we're at as we form this base crop price. And that's where I'm nervous that if we keep going lower, the base price will be lower than my hedge price. And I just can't afford that for clients with such profitability at stake, because if we go below $500 of gross revenue an acre by the end of this month, because the average base price is that low, then you're talking about erasing almost all profitability in soybeans. And then that hooks up with the corn having almost no profitability. So you're in a situation where you, I think, got to defend one or the other. And that's why I like the idea of maybe a hedge to arrive if their basis is super wide. I'll be looking at July and August puts, even though those aren't new crop. If the Brazilian crop is as big as they say it's going to be, I might take a risk in the old crop to protect new.
I take it you want to defend soybean rather than corn.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where the weekly export sales show a very big contrast that the trade, I think, is finally realizing. But, and you've got weather in Argentina that could really clip both crops, but really clip the corn. When it comes right down to it, because really, other than Argentina, you don't have a South American country to offset whatever damage has been done in Brazil. But so if you have a situation with the corn market now, looking at accumulated exports year to date up almost 30%, and then you see the beans accumulated exports year to date down almost 30%, then you've got the exact opposite of what the trade psychology has been: weak corn demand, strong bean demand. And I think the corn demand's coming on as we had hoped it would. And then you throw on top of that soybean oil year-to-date exports accumulated, I think, are almost 60% off of where they should be. And so that's another big piece of the puzzle. We don't have soybean oil and crude oil to support us in the soy complex. So wheat and crude remain the leaders to me at this point.
You said that China remains at the heart of this. Actually, that soybeans and hogs remain at the heart of this. Soybeans, easy to understand. Why hogs?
Well, because hogs are the biggest sensitive feature to the deflationary pressure, because the pork price makes up such a large percentage of the consumer price index. So when Shanghai Equity Index, their blue chip index in mainland China, hit a new five-year low on Friday morning, it wasn't hard to see that the Dalian hog futures was going to be in China down, and it was down about 1.5%. So that inflation deflation link is really very high in the pork complex, and I think that's why that pork and bean trade has been so far pretty reliable if the beef Chinese situation, but we're not there yet.
Anything else? And I guess maybe the outside markets from the United States today.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that knocked us down, I think, was the jobs data, and then Federal Reserve also saying they weren't going to cut rates. That takes off the risk on mindset and commodities. And then when you see the jobs numbers so strong compared to the estimates, the dollar went up to new two-month highs, tried to even test its December highs, or came within earshot of that. So we were nearing three-month highs in the dollar by the end of the grain trade. And I think that really impacted us extra. And it took the gains out of the hard red wheat, which we do have, like in Argentina, corn and beans. We do have some significant weather issues maybe on the horizon for hard red wheat. So again, I would say crude oil market way undervalued given geopolitics. Wheat undervalue. Those are the best scenarios in the coal mine for a turnaround.
Thanks much. We look forward to seeing you on the 5th day of March at the Beef House.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzula, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Now joined by Kelly Estes. She's at the Illinois Natural History Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, an entomologist that does a survey of insects across the state each and every summer, tracks them in many ways. In fact, we use this on the air here at Illinois Public Media, some of it during the spring months, especially as it's related to when insects are arriving. Thank you, Kelly, for being with us. Some of the things that you do are just keeping track of populations. So last summer, each summer, in fact, you do go out and do a survey of insects in the state and how they're changing. What did you find last summer?
Oh, last summer seems so long ago right now, but we're looking through all the data, still summarizing some stuff, pulling information from it. And I think our survey gives a really good indication of what pest densities were here around the state in the middle of July. In like many years, it's a snapshot in time at certain locations. And so it does vary from county to county and crop reporting district and crop reporting district. But, you know, we're looking for lots of different insects, Japanese beetles, Western corn rootworms, Northern corn rootworms, Dectus stembor, and many, many others. And I think there's a lot of different insects that people are interested in. And two of the biggest ones are Japanese beetle and Western corn rootworm. Both have been pretty important pests here in Illinois in the past. And so those are the ones we often get the most questions about. And Japanese beetles tend to have a variable population over the years. And we often see populations slowly start to build in an area, peak, and then we'll see a rapid decline. And so in recent years, our eyes have been on the northwest and western part of the state, where populations were just a tad bit higher than maybe some of the other areas. And honestly, this past summer, populations were a little lower, which is probably a relief for many of the producers in that area. Not to say that we didn't see fields within a county or certain counties that had higher counts than others. And while these do give us an indication of what's going on in an area, we still always recommend farmers to get out and take a look in their own fields and see what's exactly happening in theirs. With Western corn rootworm, it was much of the same. We've noticed lower populations over the past couple of years, and that trend continued in 2023. Overall, our state average was pretty low. Not to say that we didn't, once again, find hot spots throughout the state. We are battling resistant populations in different areas. And so as we drive through East Central Illinois, we could see definite areas where their numbers were a little higher. Also, we get to the northern part of the state where maybe we see more corn on corn. And those populations tend to be a little bit higher as well.
I had not heard about the East Central Illinois populations. I'll be interested to hear more about that. But let's deal with what's happening in the northern part of the state. There are northern and western corn rootworms, both, that have been an issue and are resistant, I believe. You can tell me more about that and where those populations might be.
So when we focus on the northwestern part of the state, or even we get into maybe Kane or DeKalb counties, we do tend to see some areas with some higher westerns or northerns, mostly based on cropping practices, corn on corn. We tend to see a little bit more of those. We are keeping an eye on westerns. They are very interesting. Also in western Illinois, and you know, our survey showed some lower numbers of northerns this year, but as you know, we're out in the field all summer long. And as we were in doing some other surveys in August, we started to see higher numbers of those northerns. So I feel like we did have some maybe delayed emergence of northerns this year. And there were definite areas or areas that had definitely higher populations than when we were out there in July.
Tell me about what's happening in East Central Illinois. Not something I had been privy to.
I was proud of my wording. So we did see, you know, as we drive in these counties, we stop at five different locations and we'll start driving, drive 5 miles, stop, for instance. And the first field may not have any westerns, and maybe the next field has a little bit more. But every once in a while, we do find a field with a few more, or I don't want to say significant, but higher numbers of westerns. And so overall numbers are still very, very low here in East Central Illinois. So not to raise any red flags like that, but it is worth noting that we can get some areas with a few more westerns, but overall we're still not at economic levels of years and years ago.
Thank you much.
You're welcome.
Kelly Estes is with the Illinois Natural History Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and she is responsible for the annual summer survey of insects across the state. locations across the planet. Happy Groundhog's Day to you, by the way. And I guess Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow this morning and would have a early spring.
Yeah, that, you know, it's, he prefers to see it, which means he gets scared and runs back in for more winter. So, I mean, historically, I think he's done it. Oh, gosh, more than 110 times, I think he's found his shadow, something around that. And then very few does he not. And so this was a morning where wisely, I think, given how warm the temperatures are going to be for the next 10 days, they went ahead and went after the early spring commentary. I actually found it quite entertaining. I watched it this morning and I love the little poem they read and everything. But I'm going to tell you something kind of fun here. All right. We make fun of the groundhog all the time as atmospheric scientists. And I hear a lot of us do it, but I think we all need a little bit of a ego check. So this morning, when I was looking at all of this, I said, well, how good are we at predicting 2, 3, 4 months in advance? And did you know that some of the weather forecast models that I use every single day to look out longer range, their skill scores are often negative? let me give you a case in point, okay? So Todd, if we were having this same phone call last year, which we did, our predictions for spring were for pretty tight planting windows. And we were spot on until May the 8th. Now, if you go back and if we could go back and listen to every time we talked, I didn't start telling you about how dry spring was going to get until probably about May the 10th when it all shut off. And that's when we started saying, well, I don't think it's going to rain again really for the rest of the month. Nobody was upset until you got into June. You're like, well, where's the rain? And we just kept kicking the can down the road. So it's a reminder that even though we would say that the groundhog has no predictive skill, sometimes flipping a coin is better than the models. And I'm not joking there. So it's all very difficult to predict that longer range stuff. And certainly it was wise to say that early spring, because the next 10 days are just very, very mild as this El Nino continues. And we've got a real strong Pacific jet that's targeting California with a lot of rain. I mean, a lot of rain and maybe 4 or 5 more feet of snow over the weekend in the Sierra Nevada. And we're just going to wait. We're going to wait here under mild conditions to get some precipitation in, maybe not until the end of next week before we see it. So yeah, that's it, man. It's I've spent a whole career kind of teasing that groundhog, but then I have to do the reality check of how good am I? And all of a sudden, it doesn't look so bad when he's only right 40% of the time.
When you're ready to check and see how good you've been, how far back would you like to go with her conversations? I have them, all of them.
Okay, Todd, what I really want is for you to have short and long-term memory loss so that you don't ever look at them again.
I do, but they're hidden. I can get to them. But not easily.
Good.
Okay, so short and long-term memory loss. Was January warm or cold?
It was both. We came in warm, and then about January 9th, it got very cold for about 10 or 12 days, and then it went back warm again. I'm going to be honest with you. Remember how I told you what I would want to dial up for winter? I told you, this is what I want. I want wildly fluctuating temperatures during winter, and there's a reason for that. It helps with any moisture we get to soak in when it comes through, and secondly, it does a lot for our compaction issues. Deep freezes followed by thaws. I mean, I jokingly say this, but the more work DOT has to do, IDOT has to do in the spring and summer, the better the crops are going to be because of how bad the winter was. So we're very mild right now, which means we finished January mild. When you look back at the whole month, you know, you're like, wait a minute, the statistic doesn't make any sense, right? And that's because of how much it fluctuated. So here's the thing. The mild air we've got now, when do we see another cold air outbreak? Well, we may get one at the end of February, and then maybe into the beginning of March. But remember, cold at the beginning of March is not like cold in December or in January. So we'll wait on that to see if that pattern changes. But man, if you let me dial up one more thing, I'm going to hate to tell you this, but it's what I want. I want a March 20th blizzard. I want 6 inches of slushy snow that's got 3 inches of liquid in it. And then I want after that for things to calm down so we can have a great start to our season. But that would really recharge a lot of the moisture that we still need to get into the soil.
As long as it's not March 5 during the all day, I got look at the beef house in Covington, Indiana, I'll be happy. Mellow soils, that freeze-thaw thing reminds me, different subject, but I was at the conservation cropping seminar hosting that earlier in the week. And because you and I are both from that Springfield, Lincoln area originally, they had mellow cream donuts.
Oh.
See, I did the same thing as soon as I walked in.
Yes. Nothing beats a dozen glazed donuts from Mellow Cream. Ugh.
You are so right. Here in the United States, what do you see for the springtime?
Yeah. So big thing is El Nino's still there and it's slowly collapsing. So we say, well, what typically happens? February is a bit drier, which we're going to get through a big chunk of February without a whole lot of extra moisture. But we tend to see March, April, and May come back on. In other words, we tend to just favor a little bit wetter than average conditions. So I'm going to say it again this year, that at this point, April, probably through early mid-May, does look again to be stormy and wet, which means when we find windows, we're going to have to aggressively get into them. But unlike a year ago, we're not going to go into this spring with the same soil moisture problems we had going into last spring. And that's good. I took a soil sample in my backyard last weekend, and I went down 16 inches, and it was muddy. And now imagine if I would have worked that my yard over in the fall, I would have been much better at getting more of that moisture down. So I actually think we're doing better and better at recovering moisture right now.
You took a soil sample in your backyard last weekend.
Yep.
Congratulations.
I wanted to know how much of it soaked in. And sure enough, it was 16 inches of really wet soil.
All right. Turn your attention to South America, Argentina particularly.
Well, about 14 days of dryness in Argentina was not something to be concerned about, which it's been for the last 2 weeks because it was cool. But right now the heat's really coming on Argentina. They're going to have several days way into the 90s, a couple of days cracking 100 across their main growing areas. But reality is they had okay moisture leading up to this drier time period. And I was talking to my good friend Arlen Suderman about it. He thinks that about 20% of both the corn and soybean crop are in those critical reproductive stages where this could maybe pull back some of the yield potential. But overall, the dryness that'll last about February 8th and the heat that's going to last till about then as well, it's not cause for a major concern about knocking back total production. So that's going to be, folks going to talk about it, but I think we just need to take a tempered look at it because of how good the rest of the season has been. Meanwhile, northern Brazil, they're still trying to rapidly harvest beans and then get the safrinha corn in. My understanding is Mato Grosso is a little behind on putting the safrinha corn in. And the biggest concern I have there is it's still kind of wet in that area, which may slow them down a little, but not much. And then the concern will be, once we get to April, does anything kind of shut the monsoon off a bit early? The beginning of that safrinha crop, though, does look okay in terms of weather.
You have a very good weekend, Eric. I know you're going to Springfield for a couple of conferences Saturday and then down to Nashville for the AgMarket.net conference. Be safe out there, and we'll talk with you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Daggerville. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. If you'd like to see Eric in person at a conference, you can do that at our all-day Ag Outlook. It's the Beef House on Tuesday, the 5th day of March. The cost is just $40. He'll kick off the first session in the morning at the Beef House. Buy your tickets today online at willag.org, willag.org. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.